The Capital Connection is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals standing with more than 600,000 workers in education, human services, and healthcare with the Our Voice, Our Values, Our Union campaign. And United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Shartok. Joining us this week, we're always happy to have her, is Karen Scharf, co-chair of the Working Families Party. The Working Families Party is a third party in New York State, which has done extraordinarily well in recent elections. And we want to welcome you, Karen, and congratulate you on all your good work.
Thank you, Alan. It's a pleasure to be here.
Okay. So right now, there does seem to be a move on by the part of the organized Democrats and maybe Republicans to get rid of third parties in New York. Can you explain that?
Sure. So just to step back for a moment for your on two things for your listeners. First, on third parties in New York. New York election law makes it possible for candidates to run with the support of more than one political party, which is very helpful to our democracy because it allows political parties to either choose their own candidate or to choose a candidate running from one of the major parties and let voters know that that candidate agrees with that small political party. So for the Working Families Party, people know that we stand for public policies that are to the benefit of the working people of New York State and against those policies that benefit the wealthy and the well-connected. And so when we endorse a candidate, if they're, for example, a Democratic Party member, not all Democratic Party members are with us, but when they have the Democratic line and the Working Families Party line, that gives voters a lot more information about what that candidate stands for. So it's a real advantage to voter information and voter participation to have parties be able to cross, what we call cross-endorse candidates of other parties, and also have the option remaining to us to run our own candidate if we don't like either of the major party candidates. And as you said, there is a move on, led by the governor and by Jay Jacobs, the chair of the Democratic Party, to either reduce the rights of small parties or get rid of that right to cross-endorse other candidates. We don't believe they'll be successful because it's actually a constitutional right in New York, but they're certainly trying. And they're unfortunately doing that not in any straight, above-board way. Like, they tried to do it in the legislature. They totally failed because the legislature was not in support of it. In fact, the legislature, when the governor was proposing it to the legislature during the last session, that legislature heard extensively from Democratic candidates, including both of our U.S. senators, Senator Schumer and Senator Gillibrand, almost our entire New York congressional delegation, 17 members of Congress, a whole range of Congress members from Jerry Nadler to Ocasio-Cortez to Hakeem Jeffries, who's in the leadership of Congress, saying, don't do this. Fusion's important to how democracy works in New York and important to us as candidates. Hundreds and hundreds of local elected officials all across the state telling them to continue to protect Fusion. And 26 state senators said that the governor's proposal was dead on arrival. Couldn't do it the normal way. Couldn't do it in above board policymaking. So the governor is now trying to use a commission that was established to strengthen our democracy, get big money out of elections, as a underhanded way to try to get rid of the ability of the minor parties to cross-endorse candidates. And maybe we should probably take a step back and talk about that commission for a minute. At the end of the budget session in the legislature, a commission was created to address the really huge and challenging issue that you and I have talked about many times of the role of big money in our elections. There's been a public outcry for years and years, and it's been escalating as money has played a bigger and bigger role in deciding who runs, who wins, and then as a result of that, what's on the agenda in Albany. Based on the public outcry, there was a lot of discussion, strong legislation proposed, including by the governor, during the legislative session to establish a system of public funding of elections like we have in New York City, like they have in Connecticut, where small donations would be matched by public funds, enabling candidates to run and win with small donations instead of having to go after the big money. And that big money in New York is almost always dominated by real estate and Wall Street. So we have elections controlled by real estate and Wall Street. We want to change that by giving small donors a chance to be heard. And because the legislature just really, they said the timing was too tight. The budget cycle is very tight in New York. They have 3 months. They have huge numbers of decisions to make. They couldn't figure out in time all the very specific details a public funding system has to have, because you got to get it done right. So they said, we need a commission to take the time to figure out the details and fine-tune this law. So they set up a commission to do that. At the very last moment, Saturday night, before the budget vote on Sunday, the governor inserted a line into that commission language saying they'll also look at the multi-party lines, you know, done in the secrecy of the night and without a chance for the legislature to do anything to change it. And that's why we're here now, where we have a commission created in response to a public outcry for more democracy, getting distracted with this poison pill of actually trying to harm our democracy.
So, Karen Scharf, I'm delighted to have you with us, because I never get to ask a second question. Because you're like the Energizer Bunny. Once you get wound up, you go. So.
Well, you're asking me about my favorite topics here. Public funding of elections and fusion.
So, Karen, tell us why. You know, I get to talk to the governor quite a bit these days, and I'd love to ask him about this a little bit more. I've asked him before, but I want to ask him again. What is it that you think is motivating him to do this, considering the fact that all of his colleagues, the senators and everybody else, don't seem to want it?
You know, as you said, you talk to the governor frequently. You know how he works. He does not like things he does not control. And so he's not happy that the Working Families Party supported his primary challenger in 2018. And even that he won that primary, he's probably even more unhappy that the Working Families Party went all out with our allies to make sure that we defeated what was known as the Independent Democratic Conference and Jeff Klein. And that was, as you know, a group of Democrats who worked with the Republicans to prevent Democratic control of the state Senate. And the Working Families Party, when we were formed in 1998, one of our core goals. We didn't think it was going to take this long, but one of our core goals was to move the Senate from being Republican-controlled to Democratic-controlled, so it would be more friendly to working people's issues. And then also to make sure that those Democrats, once they were in control, would be Democrats who would support the 99%, not the 1%.
And you've done it.
And we've done it. In 2018, we were successful, and the governor did not like that. The governor had more control and more power when he had the independent conference, and he could divide the Democrats. He's continued to try to divide the Democrats, trying to get the suburbanites to go against the urbanites. He hasn't succeeded. The Democratic Senate majority has done a great job of sticking together, and that makes him not happy. He still has tons of power, but somehow for him, that's not quite enough. And he has a long history of every time he does something positive, he has to find his way to get in that poison pill that somehow harms his enemies. And while we have supported him and have supported many of his allies, that's not enough for him. So he wants to kill us. And he's been quite clear that he wants to kill the WFP. And this is his way of doing it.
And the WFP, just for all those people listening in the Working Families Party, tell us a little about you and AOC.
So the Working Families Party was started in 1998. So we're 21 years old. As I started to say, our main goal in starting the Working Families Party was to have a real voice for working people, to have a voice, a party that would stand for racial and economic justice and fight for the needs of the average people of New York State, because we saw the major parties, including the Democratic Party and the state government in general, as being too heavily controlled by the wealthy and well-connected, by the 1%. And the campaign finance system, you know, is one place where we really see this, and it's so timely with this commission. Last year in 2018, right when we were successful in taking back the state Senate, the top 100 donors in New York State gave more money to candidates than all of the small donors. All 137,000 small donors combined spent less than the top 100 donors. And those top 100 donors obviously are wealthy, but they're also predominantly white and male. And so those voices get heard louder than all the diversity of small donors. And we created the Working Families Party to be a real organized counter to that control of politics by the wealthy and well-connected and the predominantly white and male voices that were being heard in our politics.
Okay. I want to ask you this. Do you think that the governor would have been happier had the Senate been maintained with Republican control?
Yes. I think he liked where he was able to play the Senate and Assembly off against each other. He did not like seeing the Senate in the 2019 legislative session. The Senate and Assembly worked well together. They passed an agenda that was incredibly beneficial to average working New Yorkers. A lot of the issues that we at the Working Families Party have worked on for years and years and years finally came to fruition, because we had a Senate and Assembly that were allied on our behalf. And we had a set of senators who, because we defeated 7 incumbent Democratic senators in primaries, and we defeated the ones who were against us. We had a set of Democratic senators who really wanted to do what was needed for tenants, for immigrants, for people who had been mistreated by the criminal justice system, for people who needed better working standards. I mean, all of the things that we've worked for years and years and years were things that were directly addressed by the Senate and Assembly. And while the governor supported many of these things, he didn't have full control over what was happening. And that does not make him happy.
Well, but to be fair, Karen Scharf, in the end, he told the so-called, you know, Democratic dissidents to pack up their tents and to cut it out. And they did. So doesn't he get some credit for that?
No, not really. The writing was on the wall. There was huge outcry within these districts that we were fed up in New York with having, you know, these Democrats, so-called Democrats, who were working with the Republicans, especially in the era of Trump. We needed Democrats to be true Democrats. And yes, the governor said to them, you guys need to come back with, stop having your separate conference, come back with Democratic majority. But the governor's plan was to have Jeff Klein and Andrea Stewart Cousins be co-leaders. Jeff Klein was leading the independent Democrats. Andrea was leading the mainstream Democrats. And the governor's plan was to force them together as co-leaders. Had that happened, had the governor been successful, and had we not defeated Jeff Klein in the primaries, we would have had a Senate that was divided, and we would have had a Senate that had one leader with the landlords and one leader with the tenants. Instead, we had a Senate that was united in tenant protection, and we can see that most clearly in housing issues, but in issues across the board. The governor would have had Jeff Klein to help him divide, and then he didn't anymore, and he's angry at the Working Families Party for the part we played in ending Jeff Klein's ability to divide the Democrats.
And as you said, for opposing him in the primary.
Yes, and for opposing him in the primary. We supported Cynthia Nixon in the primary and the challengers against the independent Democrats and other Democrats who took the side of real estate. And that gave us a chance to really change the debate in New York and also to win enough races to change the nature of governance in New York.
Yeah, but to be fair, and we always want to be fair, you and I, why is it that you are claiming all this credit for beating Jeff Klein and the rest, but you didn't come close to beating the governor when you opposed him in the primary?
Yeah, you know, of course I wish we'd won. He is a very strong candidate, and I give him credit for having been successful in his campaign to get reelected, both in the primary and in the general. Clearly, New York, the majority of New Yorkers wanted him to stay governor. I disagree with them, but that was their choice, and that's how democracy works. But it's also how democracy, it's also important that we strengthen our democracy at the same time as we appreciate it and not weaken it. And the governor's goal with trying to weaken small parties is to weaken our democracy, and we can't let that happen. And in addition to not letting that happen, we also can't lose sight of the fact that this commission was created to strengthen our democracy. The governor has said himself for years and years now, really since he first ran, that he disagrees with the massive role of big money in politics, that we need to change it, that we can't have a system where 5% of all the money raised by candidates comes from small donors and all the rest from the wealthy. And now he instead of distracting the commission from doing its job, he should be helping them focus on creating an effective system of public financing of elections so small donors' contributions get matched by the public fund and allow people to run without going, you know, hat in hand begging from the wealthiest donors in the state for money for their campaigns. We've got to get that done this year. It's long overdue in New York. And it's the thing, now that we have a Senate that's working well and has strong leadership, that's the remaining reform we need in our democracy, along with some additional voting rights reforms.
So let's go back to the idea of the commission.
Yep.
The commission was created in part to assure public financing of elections. Isn't that right?
That's correct. The purpose of the commission was to enact a system of public funding of elections, meaning a system where we'd have small donors' funds get matched by public funds so that small donors would have a greater say in our elections. That was the purpose of the commission.
So now we have been somewhat distracted, obviously, by this attack on third parties, which I have to confess I'm appalled at. But let's ask you this. How about the main thrust of the commission? Are we getting any closer to public financing of elections? The governor says he's for it. You say you're for it. Isn't it happening?
I really hope so. That's definitely the commission's job. They were instructed not just to explore, but to actually come up with and enact a system of public funding of elections. We hope they'll follow the framework that has been long favored by all of the democracy advocates and most of the organizing groups in New York that would amplify the voices of everyday New Yorkers in the political process by providing at least a 6-to-1 match for small donations, lower contribution limits. New York has the highest contribution limits of any state that has contribution limits, and also a good objective enforcement structure. And so I hope they don't get distracted by this. The first hearing, the first public hearing of the commission was held this week, and so was their first hearing for expert testimony. Hundreds of people turned out to testify, overwhelmingly in support of a strong small donor matching system, and a lot of people giving, in the expert testimony, giving very, very good detailed specifics of how to do that in a way that will make it work effectively for the average New Yorker. So I hope this commission, you know, ignores the poison pill, does nothing on fusion, doesn't take the bait on that, and really digs in and gets this done.
Yeah. But isn't this, Karen, isn't this his commission? I mean,
yes, that is always the problem. That is always the problem with commissions, is when the governor creates a commission, no matter what he says, it is the governor's commission. We've seen that over and over again in New York. I mean, you and I both recall the Moreland Commission. And, you know, the governor was out being quoted saying he's not interfering, they're going to do what they want. But we know that's not how commissions work. So I hope that the commission and the governor will stick to the plan here. I mean, the New York Times had a great editorial the other day where they said this is New York's best chance in years to adopt a strong system of public financing. And if they do it right, we'll have... will amplify the voices of small donors in elections, which means voters, too. And, you know, even the Times Union, which, you know, has historically opposed fusion voting, had an editorial saying that is not the job of this unelected commission. This commission was given a specific instruction, empowered to create a public financing system, and it would be terrible for them to try to change our constitution on fusion voting in the midst of that process. But they should do and must do an effective public funding system. And I think they will. I mean, that seems to be the momentum. Let's just hope they don't get too distracted.
There so many directions we can go in, but basically they could certainly do both, right? I mean, they could do away with you guys or limit your power and at the same time come up with a public funding mechanism.
They could. Obviously, we hope they'll do the public funding system, which has been the WFP and has fought for a long time, as has Citizen Action, the organization that I used to run, and also a very effective large coalition of over 200 organizations in New York, Fair Elections for New York. And I encourage people to check the Fair Elections for New York website and the CitizenActionNY.org website for how to get involved in this fight and make sure we get a good electoral system. But yes, the governor is trying to create this poison pill where the commission would create a public financing system and somehow embed in that law a change to the constitutional right to fusion. We think that they can't do that legally, either with how they were set up or with the fact that the Court of Appeals has upheld three times that the New York State Constitution protects fusion. So we don't think they can legally do it, but Jay Jacobs has certainly indicated he's on the commission, appointed by the governor, has indicated that he's going to try.
Okay. New York City, of course, has elections which are publicly financed, do they not?
That's right. New York City has had a long history over several decades now of a public financing system that has worked quite effectively and has worked so effectively that voters have chosen New York City to strengthen it over time, going from first a 2-to-1 to a 4-to-1 to a 6-to-1 and now an 8-to-1 match, where for every dollar a small donor gives, $8 are provided in match to the candidates.
Wow.
So that candidates really can run by just collecting small donations from voters in their district rather than going around to big money donors and doing their bidding. So New York City has shown it can work. New York City, it has allowed people to run for office in New York City who never could have run before. It really has created a large diversity of candidates, both racially diverse, large number of female candidates, and also candidates who come with no money and who run for office and represent their communities. And that's what we want at the state level.
So there's a limit on the way that this thing can work. Another limit, of course, is term limits. Isn't that correct?
Yes. New York City has term limits, which that combination.
New York City has term limits.
New York City, yes. Sorry. Wishful thinking. New York City has term limits. And that combination of term limits and public funding has been very effective for democracy. Other states with public funding don't have term limits, and the public funding system still works well to increase competition and amplify the voices of small donors and regular voters and reduce that overwhelming voice of the wealthy corporate interests that fund elections when we don't have a public funding system. So we've seen, for example, in our neighboring state in Connecticut, a very effective public funding system that has gone through multiple election cycles. Most candidates running for office participate in it. It is a voluntary system. Most candidates like it enough that they participate in it. And when we talk to candidates in these public funding systems, what they tell us is they're really glad to be able to run for office without spending all their time fundraising because they can spend their time talking to voters, which is what most people got in this to do.
Isn't there a problem that, you know, just to get some publicity, somebody like Harry the bartender will say, well, I'll run for public office just because it'll get my name out there and all these public dollars will support it?
That's why it's important for the commission to really get this right, because you have to set up the public financing system in a way that makes it It gets that balance that makes it possible for any legitimate candidate with grassroots support to qualify for the system and get public funds, but prevents people that don't have, that are not legit, that don't have grassroots support from running. So every public funding system in the country and each any cities that have it have a qualifying requirements, which require you to get a certain minimum number of small donations and a certain minimum amount of money, and setting that at the right level so that it doesn't block strong grassroots candidates from running, but does block those that don't have any support in their neighborhood is very, very important.
So what else is on your plate as the Working Families Party? You've done remarkably well, Karen Scharf, and better than anybody thought you might do.
Yes.
There used to be something called the Liberal Party, and the Liberal Party was sort of played much of your role. But then they got, to put it mildly, corrupted. They disappeared. Did you take their place?
I mean, I think we came at it from a different direction from the beginning, in that we really based our party in organizations of working people, and we built it very consciously as a multiracial party. We've got community organizations that organize in Black and Brown committees. We've got unions that have a membership that are heavily low-wage workers and heavily Black and Brown. And then we also have labor unions that have heavily white middle-class workers. And we created a cross-section of activist community organizations and labor organizations that created a real accountability, so that our party has stayed over its 21 years very accountable to our members and to the rank-and-file voters who are working people in New York State. And that has led us to consistently fight for the very things that we won in 2019, for strong tenant protections, for criminal justice reform, for driver's licenses. We won a game-changing bill that's going to slow climate change. We won an expansion of voting rights. And, you know, many, many groups worked on these things, but Working Families Party successfully provided the political muscle to elect a state legislature that was prepared to make these kind of changes and that was going to be accountable to voters because they came out of their communities. And so I am very proud of our success, because not only did we finally achieve our long-term goal of having a Democratic Senate, but we have a Senate that is led by and made up of senators who are very accountable to their own communities and to the diversity of those communities. And that's why we saw such a huge, so many, many steps forward for our democracy and for our economy in the legislative session in 2019. And we're excited to beat back this ridiculous attack and make and go into 2020 ready to take on another electoral cycle where we can defend the people we elected and elect an additional new set of legislators who are going to take this agenda even further and make sure that we have public policies in New York State that are good for democracy, that are good for our economy, and that are good for fighting against the racial inequities that our state, unfortunately, is still built upon.
Okay, now, there are some people who are angry with you, Karen Scharf, and the party, because you successfully, they think, blocked Amazon coming in as a headquarters. How do you plead?
Happy to have had a role in blocking Amazon coming in. I know you disagree with us on this, but we don't think the way to build a strong economy in New York State is by giving tax breaks and giveaways to large, wealthy corporations who are going to use that to pay their CEOs even more money and line their pockets. We think the way to build a strong economy for New Yorkers is by having living wages, good benefits, good consumer protections, and investing in our communities, especially in those communities, the Black and Brown communities that have been underinvested in over all these years. We can't operate from this idea of scarcity, because New York is a very wealthy state with lots of wealthy people. We need to have a fair tax system, and then we need to invest that money in our communities and in preparing people to have jobs. Amazon deal was not going to do that. It was the wrong way to approach economic development.
Yeah, yeah. But what about all those jobs that we're not going to get now?
You know, there are, despite all of, you know, their claims, Amazon actually is growing their workforce in New York State, and so are lots of other high-tech companies, including Google and Apple. So, you know, those jobs are going to come in other ways, and hopefully in ways that are more sustainable and that are going to better serve the people who already live in New York City and people that lived in that neighborhood where Amazon was going to go didn't look like they were going to get those jobs. I think we're now getting jobs that are more community-based and more accessible to the people of New York City.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about education. I know you've been fierce on this subject. You're one of the founders of the Alliance for Quality Education.
Yep.
And the court victories have been won and the rest of it. And yet, New York still has a pretty segregated school system.
That's absolutely right. And even though we won in court, New York State has never implemented a fair funding formula. And a fair funding formula by itself is not enough to end to solve the problems of our segregated school system, but it's necessary. We're not going to have strong schools in Black and brown communities and in low-income rural white communities until our schools are adequately funded. That's really like a basic, necessary, minimal step is to implement an equitable funding formula. And then lots of other reforms are needed as well. But that formula was upheld by the court, was enacted by Governor Spitzer, and has been undermined by Governor Cuomo since he came in.
So, I mean, let's be real here. The governor claims he puts a ton of money into education. The legislature says the same thing. Do you think money alone, and New York, by the way, pays a lot of money to educate its children in a way other states do not, with a lack of results? How come?
Well, New York, you know, we are completely dissatisfied with the current state of our public school funding and public school outcomes in New York State. But if you're comparing to other states, we actually do much better than many, many other states that underfund their schools. We do fund our schools better than many states, and we do better as a result. But we fund our schools inequitably. We have schools, you know, in places like Scarsdale that spend $35,000 per pupil, while schools in places like Buffalo or Rochester don't have those kind of resources. And so when we say we spend a lot on education, we need to look at where we're spending it and how that's getting divided up and the way that it's mirroring the segregation of our education system in New York. And yes, there have been increases to education funding, and that's necessary, but we still have not reached the level of that was established in our foundation funding formula in 2007. In 2007, after tons of research and many years of court cases, a foundation aid formula was established that was designed to meet the actual needs based on the economics of each school district. And that formula is still $4 billion a year short of being fully funded.
So we have a few more minutes. What else do you want to get done?
We definitely need to get a public funding of election system done. We also need to continue to expand voting rights. We need automatic voter registration to get implemented. And that has not yet been, while they did a lot of good voting reforms, automatic voter registration still needs to get done. And then we also do, as we were just discussing, we need to fully fund our schools and we need other education advances, particularly around some of our school discipline policies that have taken us in the wrong direction in education. So those are two areas that are really important. And then we need to take further some of the things we won this year. Tenant protections that we won were great, but more is needed for those tenants outside of New York City. The criminal justice reforms were great, but again, there's a few more steps that are needed on those. And as I mentioned, on voting rights, the voting rights reforms were fantastic, but need, again, additional reforms are needed, and some of those reforms won't become final until we pass them as constitutional amendments. So we're continuing to work on those as well.
Karen Scharf of the Working Families Party, congratulations on everything you're getting done. We may not always agree on everything, but I do think the presence of the party is so important, and your role has been extraordinary, and we thank you for everything that you've done.
Thank you so much.
That's the Capital Connection for this week.